the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Welcome back to the show. It is Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick. I'm your host, Cassio. Nick, how are you doing today, sir?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. It's been a good day. I had Big Nick took me to the gym, or I took him to the gym, and I did good today. Last time we did cardio on the bike, I looked over, man, he was like almost a quarter of a mile ahead of me. I was like, oh, crap. And I started going, man, and I didn't catch him. But today I looked over there, and the old guy was about an eighth of a mile ahead, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I just kept on rolling, man. It is, you know, sometimes you have good days, and sometimes your body says, man, let that young guy just outride you, man. But today was a good day. We had a great workout. I know I did my job. When I look over, he looks at me and goes, whew, I'm a sweaty head.
I'm a sweaty head.
Yeah, he'll give me that when I got him going, man.
All right, let's get to some questions. Also, I forgot to wear my shirt.
Oh, that's okay. You have
you
to catch it on
the
next
shirt.
One.
It's sitting yeah, there finally. Laid out so I could wear it, and I forgot all about it.
Oh, man.
I just remembered about, I was going to say, hey, we got a show coming up at Das Barbecue.
Yeah.
In South Wrestling. And I remembered, I forgot my shirt.
And this is going to air right before our show on the 20th, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Yeah. You're going to have Jim and Jules big birthday surprise party for her. And, well, it's not a surprise now. She knows it's coming. But everybody's going to celebrate that. And we got a great tag team match. Bad and Beautiful taking on Jacob Johnson and Tyson Maddox. They are Jacob and Tyson. They're two badasses now. And Tyson's a kid I told you that just came back from that real successful Japan tour. And Jacob is the Deep South resident badass, man. He had matches where him and the kid he was wrestling with broke three boards in the ring, you know, for just smashing each other. So, jeez. I mean, yeah. So Bad and Beautiful. We're going to see what they're made of here at this one. We've got some great matches lined up, man. We've got Cosmo Martinez is going to be there. I'd have to look back at the card, man, to see who all is going to be there. But that big tag match, Oaks Grilla the Great is going to be defending his title also against Chad Skywalker. That's going to be the big one, man, because that's a matchup that I've been really wanting to see. I think they hooked up. I'm sure they wrestled before on the circuit, and I know they have one time for Deep South back at the Joyce Grable Memorial Show. Mm-hmm. My company sent a match, a title match over there. You know, it was a fundraiser for her family to pay hospital bills and stuff from when you know, she left. She was in intensive care for a while before she passed. So anyway, that's where Skrilla the Great and Chad Skywalker have met one time before. And I wasn't able to attend because I couldn't get anybody to watch my mom and my son on that night. So, like, damn, I wanted to see that one, you know. So I'll be at this one, you know. And from what I understand, they really brought it, man. And because both of those kids can, you know, and they have different styles. That Chad, he can chain wrestle, but, man, he does some incredible high-flying stuff and just different maneuvers that you don't normally see. You know, a different little twist on things. You know, it should be a great matchup, man. Skrilla the Great has to defend that title here at Deep South, and that's exactly what he's doing. We're putting him up against the top kids. That's going to be a great match to watch. And that tag match, like I said, that Jacob Johnson, he's and his partner, man, the Bad and Beautiful, they're going to have their hands full. And it's going to be because I love tag team action, man, and these teams, even though Jacob and his partner, they're new. They haven't really formed a team before, but they both are so strong and are doing so well in singles matches that they've shown me that they've got the psychology and timing and knowledge to be able to step into that situation. And if they can just get, you know, their personalities can gel, then they should do really well. It'd be an interesting team, interesting matchup to see, because we're trying to build the tag team division up here in Deep South.
That is January 20th, Das Barbecue. Is that correct?
Yeah, Tyson Maddox and Jacob Johnson taking on Bad and the Beautiful, and Skrilla the Great will be taking on Chad Skywalker. That's the two big ones that we got, like about five other matches, I think. And plus the Jim and Jules big birthday bash, man.
Free
you can't
show,
miss that.
Right?
Yes, sir. Free
show. Go. Good barbecue. Good eats. Good drinks.
Yeah, it's a great
fun
time.
Night in Atlanta.
Yes, sir. Come on down and be part of the party, man. Become part of the Deep South family. We got a great little thing going on down there.
Want to know more about the card and about Deep South Wrestling and all their events? Make sure you follow them on social media. Deep_South_Wrestling on Instagram. They're on YouTube, Facebook, the whole deal. So Deep South Wrestling. Just search it, throw in your Google machine. You'll see it come up somewhere. And go check it out if you're in the Atlanta area. And if you are listening to this and you are in the business, if you are a wrestler, reach out to Deep South Wrestling. See if you can roll through and see if you can get something. Challenge one of the boys or the ladies.
Yeah, we're looking, man. I'll say I'm looking at the kids that are putting in the work and are going out every week, every weekend, and hitting the different, you know, not just in the same town every time. But getting out, man, in a tri-state area. Man, I got kids, like I said, that are going international, you know. So, you know, I got one kid that just come back from a successful Japan tour. Another one that's going on a German tour coming up right, you know, within a few weeks. And so give us a holler, man. But you just got to send us some video first. We got to send it to Eric Adams at Deep South Wrestling, and he'll check it out. But he's the one that's doing my booking for me. But hey, send us some video.
I'll ask the first question here. Made me think of it while you were talking. Talk about what it does for a wrestler, maybe even for a referee, just anybody in the business that finally gets to go overseas and get that experience and that taste in front of not only a new crowd, but a new country. You know, they like different styles. You said Germany, Japan. Australia's got a good one. Canada, of course, is a little different, even though it's close to us, but it's still, talk about what that does for a wrestler getting a taste of going to a different country.
It's awesome. You know, you get to travel, you're so busy usually when you're working for the big companies, and things have changed so much since COVID, but back in the day, man, you had to cut time out if you was going to go see something and it was coming out of your sleep time. If you went out to go see something, you know, but it's awesome, man. You get a chance to see the world, but performing in front of the foreign crowds, your business is hotter. You wouldn't be going international. So when you do these international tours, you know, I'm talking about, because I've only done it with big, you know, with A companies, with WCW and WWE. But man, the fans are absolutely off the charts, man. They're loud and they're into what you're doing, and they pack the lobbies of the hotels to see you when you're going to show up and when you're going to leave. And it's incredible. And then to go on an international tour and, you know, 8 or 10 day run, we're in a different town every night, and they're busing from here, flying from here to there, somewhere different every night. And it's a tremendous experience, man. And like I said, the crowds are just so into it. That's, when I was over there, there was a couple of towns that, you know, there's a Birmingham, England has got like one of the largest arenas, man. It is friggin' huge. And when you're standing in the middle of the ring, you know, you're surrounded and all the sound is coming right down at you. And I remember the first time I was on an international tour, I was out in the middle of the ring for Undertaker's entrance. When Undertaker come popping out and they could actually see him, and the gongs was going off and his music was playing, as soon as that spotlight hit him, man, I got chill bumps, man. So as soon as that spotlight hit him, that place would freaking erupt. I mean, and everywhere you went, whether it be Europe or Asia, Africa or Australia, you know, it's just anywhere international, because you're a company from the States. You know, so you're different than the local flavor, and man, they are there to rock. But back to the Undertaker coming out there, I'm standing in the middle of the ring now. He comes popping out, and the place just friggin' erupts, man. And it was almost as loud. You ever been to a drag race, and when the drag cars go by, you can actually feel the friggin' sound a little bit? Yeah, I could feel the sound of the people when they initially pop. Whoa, when he come out, it was like I said, man, it gives you chill bumps to feel, because that's when you can feel the crowd and feel the sound of the crowd. That's loud, man. And that's something that you'll never forget, man.
All right, let's get into some of the fan questions. Yuck wants to know. He says three funniest, but you can give me one, or if you remember multiple, just what are three? He says, what are three funniest things you witnessed while in the ring?
While in the ring.
What's something funny you witnessed in the ring?
Snake Brown getting hammered by superstar Bill Eady one time, when back in the day when we were doing studio TVs. And everything, you know, back in the day, it was still kayfabe, you know, and we didn't even talk to our camera people and producers hardly back then about what was, you know. So the guys back then, when they'd go to Japan, you had to work snug, yeah, not snug, but stiff. They wanted you to beat the crap out of them. And if you did, because that's what they were going to do to you.
Yeah.
You know, so all our big name guys, you know, Hansen and Brody and Superstar, and all, you know, all those guys are going over there, and they'd be over there several weeks, and they was just hammering people, just clubberizing people, man. That's what they wanted, you know. So when they'd come back to the States, it'd take a little bit of time to readjust from just blah to back to our style of working, right. So Eddie, the superstar, Bill Eddie, he locks up with Snake Brown, he pulls him back in the corner, and he lights him up with a couple of shots, and man, he put him in there. And Snake was this great big, like 6'5" guy that had wild hair that stood up straight on his head. He covered his head and ran across to the other corner and dropped to his ass. He looked over at me in the middle. Now, we're filming TV in the studio back then where it was that serious. He goes, "Hey, referee, arrest that man, he's trying to kill me." And I looked at Superstar, and he looked at me, and he started laughing his ass off. And you could hardly tell because he had that mask on, right? And when he busted out laughing, it made me bust out laughing. But I'm on, you know, the TV cameras are on, you know, and it was kayfabe still. It was a damn serious business back then. Right. You know? But anyway, I was doing a lot of this, trying to keep from, you know, people from seeing me. But man, that was the damn funniest thing. It didn't light. He tried to lighten up a little bit. The Snake, poor Snake, still got hammered a few more times. Man,
arrested.
We didn't prosecute him though.
Any other time you remember breaking out in laughter, having to cover your mouth?
Yeah, I was refereeing the French Angel one time. And he used
the
to do
French
different
Angel.
Yeah, Frank Morrell.
Okay.
And he used to do different imitations of people. And Root Bernard used to do this thing where he would like a rooster looking thing, you know, and he'd make this goofy looking face, man. And just all of a sudden, in the middle of the damn match, Morrell walked over in front of me and broke down into that goofy chicken walk looking thing and looked at me, "Wambo! This is a damn serious business we're in, all right?" And when he did that, I just started laughing. I couldn't help it. There wasn't even no covering up to it because I was belly laughing, man. And it was just so goofy, you know.
But who was the guy that did the rooster walk? Who was he imitating?
Brute Bernard, an old timer named Brute Bernard.
Bernard.
Yeah, he would do this thing with his arms where he would pump and kind of look like. The dudes from Australia, the sheep herders, you know how they
bushwhackers,
bushwhackers, yeah. So yeah, it kind of looked similar to that, you know, not the arm, but the pump gimmick, you know, it kind of looked like that a little bit, you know, because it wasn't his character. And all of a sudden, he broke down, started doing Brute Bernard, and I used to imitate a guy named an old timer named Frank Hickey. He'd always watch the matches, and he'd be watching green guys. Or if he'd be out there working with a green guy and a green guy did something wrong, he'd look back at the locker room and go, "Pepper tree, very pepper tree."
pepper tree, because it's green?
Yeah.
That's great.
And guys would all bust out laughing, you know. But he'd just yell from the ring back to the guys. Like, "Pepper tree, very pepper tree." He had a funny voice, you know.
It's pepper tree.
Yeah.
That's
my
great,
dad,
though.
My dad, speaking of Frank Hickey, this is not a funny story. It's a serious story. My dad wrote down, when we found some memoirs that my dad wrote. He wrote one book and he was writing a second one. And there was a story, and I don't even remember what territory it was, but I was just a little boy. My sister wasn't even born yet. And And evidently, Frank Hickey was alone at a hotel at Christmas time, wherever we was at. And Pop knew it. So Pop just went and bought him like a billfold or something and stopped by the hotel and took it to him. And he had me go with him. And I can't remember this. I'm so little, you know, this is just, I'm going by what, you know, the story, you know? So Pop knocked on the hotel and there I'm a little big boy. I'm holding this little Christmas present. I handed him a Christmas present and he opened it. It was a billfold and it touched him so much because he was there alone, you know, and being alone on the road is man, y'all tough. Don't know. Y'all don't know. To be away from your family and be alone on the road is, it's
especially on holidays. Yeah.
Yeah. And evidently, and the guy broke down in a tear, you know. I always thought that would make a cool video for a wrestling Christmas story, you know, to have the video of the young guy showing up an old timer alone by, you know, either because he was divorced or whatever, but for whatever reason, he was alone in the hotel on by himself at Christmas time, you know, and turned out that the guy that brought the present was Jody Hamilton. And the little kid that handed up the present was Nick Patrick.
That's wild. Did you, what did your dad write it on? He just kept a journal or what?
Yeah, it's on a tablet. My mom's got it at the house tucked away somewhere. To my mom at this point, bless her heart, she'll get papers and manuscripts and papers and crap. That shit's important, man. But she has something that's really important. So we got to try to hide the important stuff from her. But she'll get stuff and she'll move it and forgot where she put it. And she accused us of stealing it. So we had to go and find it. And so, well, we found it. See, nobody stole it. You know, and she'll look at you. She'll, for sure, it's a damn shame that somebody would steal from an old woman. Like, it damn sure is, but nobody did.
I bet that tablet's got some great stories in it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm hanging on to that tablet to maybe do something with it, and maybe even do a little Christmas story, like something at Christmas time. Do a little video, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if it was well put together, it'd be a pretty cool little thing. You know,
that's pretty neat. Cool,
yeah. But anyway, we got off the beaten path from the
that's the beauty of this show. Yeah. You never know where a question's going to take you.
Yeah.
Bobby KF5 GTX said, Nick, what's the greatest memory you have of WCW from 96 to 98? Kind of that heyday NWO, you know.
Oh, man.
There, but what was your greatest memory?
There were so many. I mean, it was like we was in it. The whole time was hot. You know, it was like the whole time. There was not just one instance that really stood out. It was like just blur of time. It was that we were on fire. And it was. It's a great feeling when your territory is on fire. You know, I've been in territories that were on fire before the wrestling wars. And then I was when the wrestling war started, I was on the in second place for years and years, you know, and then finally to move into first place and to hold it for a while, that's a hell of a feeling, man. That's like winning. It's like winning a championship, you know, because it was a legitimate war. And
what do you remember about that first night that everybody starts talking about, hey, we beat them in the ratings? Do you remember that? Or do you remember it? Hey,
I don't really remember the first night. I don't really remember the first night because it didn't just happen. I mean, we started, it was a closing of the gap deal. And then it was a nip and tuck and then a pass, you know. It didn't just all of a sudden, we just went boom, you know, because it was a surge. It was kind of a climb type of deal. But it was an awesome time, man. And I guess the one thing that really stuck out in my mind when I knew that we was going to go on a wild ass ride is when Hogan turned on Sting and the reaction that those people had when they got just bombarded with stuff, man. That was heat. And I hadn't seen that kind of heat in a long time because, you know, we had just gone ahead and told everybody we're entertainment, blah, blah, blah. But you got to kayfabe your storyline and you protect your business all the time, you know, and it's like watching magic. You know, it's magic, but you don't want to know how the hell they're doing it.
Right.
You don't want to be able to see through it, you know? And so, you know, but anyway, when that stuff come bombing down, I knew that it was going to be a wild ride. You know, it sure enough, it was, man.
All right, let's keep it rolling. Derek Payne says, was there ever a time in a match where the match went awry and you had to call an audible on the finish? I'm sure that's happened to you a few times, right?
Oh, yeah. It's usually if a guy gets hurt.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I was working with Booker T and Matt Hardy somewhere. I think one of the Jersey Shore towns somewhere who worked for WWE. And Book was supposed to kick out. And I went, one, two. He looked at me and said, I'm hurt. And when he said, I'm hurt, I just stopped the count because I knew, because he said he was hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that takes precedence over a storyline or a match. You know, you got to protect your talent, you know. So, and I did in a way. I stopped the count, I made Matt get off of him and go stand, backed him over to a corner. I went and ran back over and dropped down to Booker to check him. And he said, I can't get up. He said, I'm hurt. So I didn't know what to do. And then, so the end of the match, I said, all right, you got a 10 count. I gave him a 10 count, counted him out, boom, and then gave the X and had him come out, you know, which I should have just stopped the match. But sometimes you're just winging it sometimes, but you don't know what to do when you go off the page. You know, there's not a real right answer or wrong answer where I should have just, you know, boom, and just stopped it and not been a match, you know. But we're so geared into the producing the match. We're so into our business that sometimes we lose sight of the reality of somebody's hurt. You know, and you're still going to – like when I got hurt, when I blew my knee out real bad. And I was out for a couple of years. It was hurt so bad. And I still jumped up the one friggin' leg and to lock up. And I had the guy wrestle with me lock up. I'm supposed to go over. And I said, small package me, and I hit my good leg. I said, but get this leg. And I was going to leave this other one alone. Mm. And he said, oh, man, he said, you're supposed to go over. I said, brother, you're going to be here for a while. My ass is going home. You know,
yeah.
I'm in shock. You know, it was that bad. But we're so geared into trying and to do the product and to be hard ass and to go, you know, like Triple H when he hurt his leg and still got what it was, a 30 something minutes out of it with a quad or whatever. And it's, you know, it's why? You know, why?
Yeah.
You know,
just in your head. It's just burned in your head for so long that you just, you know, it's like it's the other athletes in any other sport where they go, you got your bell rung and a concussion. Why are you going back in? And they go, I'm going in.
Yeah. Where are you at? Hell, I don't know, but I can go out there.
Yeah. I can go try to tackle again.
I ain't sure. I know, but I know they got a different color jersey than me. I'm going to knock them down.
That's it. Craig Usher hit us up. Thanks, Craig. Appreciate you dropping a question over at Ad Free Shows. What was it like to wrestle as Assassin number 3? What's your most memorable memory of this?
I never did. Not ever.
You were never an assassin.
Not ever. Never in my life. Somebody asked me that once. I think there was an angle down in Florida, in Florida wrestling. But that wasn't me. A lot of people thought it was me. But
Tom, you keeping a kayfabe on us?
No, honest to God. shoot. You know, I got no reason to kayfabe something that old. You know, if I did an angle that was cool, I'd want credit for it, man.
Just wrestle as Nick Patrick? Did you have any others?
No, I always was just Nick Patrick.
Wow.
And then Tom Ernesto's son has used the assassin gimmick before, and Tom Jr., but I never did. I never did. I was always kind of my own entity, and when I broke in, more people knew me as Nick Patrick because of being on Channel 17 and with Georgia Championship Wrestling and then with WCW. And so just using my, you know, the Nick Patrick name, I just kept it, you know, that more people knew me as that.
I didn't know if you had like a moment like our buddy Road Dogg that was the Dark Secret. Do you remember when he did Dark Secret?
No, I kind of do.
He was in the Marines and he was 19, so they put him under a mask and called him the Dark Secret.
Well, man, yeah, he had talent. He had talent even back then, probably hadn't even been in the ring. Jumped in and could steal the show. Yeah, he could steal the show.
He said, the dark secret? And he said, Cornette said the secret was you were an Armstrong brother. Nobody knew it. Speaking of, Yuck chimed in again. And he said, Nick, fans need more funny Road Dog stories. I know you have a few to spark conversation between Cassio and yourself. Do you got one we don't know, or perhaps something that's happened more recently? Y'all haven't, last time we talked, all three of us, y'all hadn't seen each other in person in a while, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been, I hadn't seen him since then or talked to him since. Well, I was on Facebook a couple of times. We messaged
each other. When's the last time we saw each other in person?
It's been several years. I hadn't really? Seen him, yeah, or any of his brothers either, for that matter. I hadn't seen Scott or Steve. Steve is more secluded than Scott and Brian. You know, he's harder to find, but he's still a tight friend, and we still talk on the phone. In fact, I probably talk more with Steve than I do with Brian
really?
And Scott. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Me and Steve got along great, man, because I'm different too.
I'm different too.
I march to the beat of my own frigging drum too a lot of the time.
I think they. I think all them Armstrong boys, they got a whole drum line. They're all on their own.
Oh drum. Yeah, that's why they scrapped. It was funny, man. Yeah. It was like they were like that old John Wayne movie, Hands of Iwo Jima. They had the two brothers that just fought. That was Armstrong Brothers, but there was like four of them, so there was always the same two, and it was, you know, they didn't fight all combinations. These two always would fight, and these two would always fight, and there would be, and it was like there would be a war between. But you know, when you just have to stay out of the wars, man. let them settle their own battles.
A brother fight, you don't want to mess with a brother fight. Because if you interrupt them, they'll both fight you.
They're gonna pummel your ass and then go back to fighting.
Adam Krasnov said, Nick, can you talk about the 1991 War Games match? Sid powerbombed Brian Pillman on the back of his head, knocking him unconscious. You rushed into the ring and stopped the match. Do you recall what the original finish was to be? And also, what was the atmosphere like backstage after the show? Were any of the wrestlers, such as Flair, chewing out Sid over the botch?
I don't think I don't think it was a botch, unless I threw up the X signal and they sent help out to check him out. And you know, if I come running in the ring and stop the match, and that was the finish, then that more than likely was a finish, because I don't recall Brian legitimately getting hurt like that by Sid. Sid was a little bit careless sometimes with people, but he was always business. You know, I mean, he was more careless with the guys that enhancement guys, more to say, you know, not the guys that he was on the road with all the time, you know, but he wasn't bad with them. He was just a little, you know, a little more careful. He let him fly through the air without a little less body control, not lay him down as flat, you know, just a little more rugged style. As far as I don't remember me jumping in the ring and stopping a match and there being a big beef in the back about him doing something to somebody. If it was, that was great storyline. And I'm glad that y'all enjoyed it.
From what I've read and seen, he really did powerbomb him and knock him unconscious. So I think he really hopped in there and got him. But it looks when you go back and look at the footage, it looks pretty brutal. But you know, if you're not remembering it right off the top, that means there wasn't much fuss maybe backstage.
Yeah, no, there was no backstage beef about it at all. And to me, like I said, unless I threw up that X sign and I'd have known that something like that, you know, I'd remember somebody saying, "Oh my God, Nick, Sid just hit her. Get out there!" You know, and if he really did that, why would they send Nick Patrick out there? What the hell is Nick Patrick gonna do to stop Sid Vicious? You know, if it was a legit shoot, they would have hit it with agents and security. You know, I mean, but they sent Nick Patrick. Now I'm a bad man. Don't get me wrong. But Nick Patrick wasn't going out there in airplane spinning Sid Vicious or powerbombing Sid Vicious.
Sid kind of, I guess, forgot how tall he was, man. He had him near the top of the cage.
Yeah.
Real close there. And he actually bombed him the first time, and it looked pretty rough. And he kind of, it almost like he checked on him, but then he did it again a second time. So he might have got his bell rung. Well, let's see what we got here. Here's another good recall story. He said, "Were you involved, or do you recall the story of the night Wahoo McDaniel got into a fight in Bennigan's and was arrested.
That was in a Carolina territory. That didn't happen down in Georgia that I know of. I've known a Wahoo getting in some different fights before, though.
Yeah,
he said, I didn't know about the beginning. Yeah, I'd heard that. I heard that something about him putting some food on somebody's face.
Yeah, he shoved nachos on a lady in the middle of a restaurant, and she was trying to play Pac-Man, and they were trying to eat on the Pac-Man game. And she
that's a little over the top.
Yeah. She finally moved his plate out of the way, and he said, "Well, if you want to move it here," and he smeared all the nachos on her, and then the cook came out of the kitchen, hit him with a mop handle, and then they all started fighting, and apparently he dunked the guy's head in the sink back in the kitchen, and
then
they come arresting him and got the whole deal.
Oh man, I know there was a beef in there was an old bar in Atlanta down in, it was an International Avenue now, it was called Stewart Avenue back in the day, called D Ford's, and that's where everybody went, man, rock and roll club, and it was just wide ass open. And evidently, brawl had broken out, you know, because some of the wrestlers in there, Slater was in there, Wahoo was in there. And somehow, Wahoo had a pistol in his pocket, and I don't know what was going on, but somehow that pistol went off. And a bullet ricocheted off the floor and hit Slater in the leg.
Oh.
And the fight kept going. Slater said, "Wahoo, goddammit, you shot me in my leg." You know, the Slater in his voice, "Goddammit, Wahoo." And evidently, the fight kept going. But, and
they left, or they just fought with a gun?
I don't know how it turned out. I guess they left, and Dickie went to the hospital and got his, you know, I guess it just passed through, you know, and he didn't have to have any kind of major surgery, but he ended up taking a shot in the leg in this bar. I remember being in that bar one night. It was friggin' packed, and Jimmy Snuka was in the wrestling in the Georgia territory at that time, and the Free Perch, and everybody was there, and it was wide ass open, and we were trying to get drinks down at one end of the bar, and we couldn't hardly get it. It was hard, you know, it took time. Snuka decided he was going to help bartend, and he leapfrogged the friggin' bar, and this is Snuka back in the day when he was just jacked, you know, and he leapfrogged the bar, and his hair came down his face, and he looked at the lady and did the thing with his face, and they were like, "Go ahead, help yourself, man.
We'll ring you up. Give what you need."
They started pouring drinks.
That's great. I heard Wahoo was a tough dude. Like, he don't mess with Wahoo.
Oh yeah, yeah. Wahoo would scrap. I remember I was working with WCW, and they were doing a pre-tape, and we were in some town in South Carolina. And it was the damnedest thing. There was a young police officer, and he decided he was going to walk through the back. And we had it stopped off. And Wahoo's job was not let anybody walk through there because they were live recording. Well, this police officer says, "I don't care what they're doing. I'm an officer of the law. I'll go where I want to go in this building." And Wahoo says, "Well, you ain't going through there." He says, "Oh, yeah, watch me." And they started to scuffle.
Oh.
And I'm like, "Holy shit." So this other senior cop comes up and to stop him, and the one cop that was in a scuffle with Wahoo looked at me and says, "Well, he saw the whole thing." And I said, "I ain't seen nothing, man." You know? And he goes, "Oh, it's like that." And I said, "Yeah, I guess it is like that." No, because he was trying to throw his weight around.
Yeah.
Just because he had a badge and a gun.
And you would have had to deal with Wahoo afterwards.
Yeah. No. I had Wahoo's back regardless. Good, you know, it was a brotherhood.
Yeah.
You know, especially back then, you know, and I had Wahoo's back regardless of what thank God it didn't turn into something worse than that. But but when the senior cop heard what was going on, he was like, "Come with me," you know, because they worked with us for weeks. And some of those guys had been there for years. That senior cop had been working wrestling for years. You know, I knew everybody. You know, here's this young guy. "I'm going to walk through there because I want to." You know, what are we going to do? Stop production so Dickhead can walk through, right? You know, come on, man. He can go around that way. You know, so that's how that went down. So. That's really the wildest of my Wahoo stories, because I, you know, he was, he was older and more mellow and kind of an agent and at the end of his wrestling career when I was around him more.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't doing a lot of the barroom brawling with Wahoo. He was a generation just between me and Pop, you know. He would fight. Yeah, Wahoo would fight.
Aaron Sheen wants to know, was there any time in WCW's decline that you wanted to leave for the WWF?
No, I always wanted to win. I always wanted to turn it around because I was working for a major company right there in my hometown where I grew up, you know, and to do that, I was possibly facing maybe moving or you know, which is, at the time, the way they have it set up, you don't have to move. But no, there was times that I was very frustrated. But and if the offer would have been right, I might have, you know, because it's business and it, you know. But an offer never really was made, and I never put out feelers, to be honest with you. I was Team WCW and was going to ride that as long as I could ride it.
All right, let's keep it going. Aaron also wants to know, Nick, got any fun stories traveling to Australia?
Well, nothing off the charts. Australia was beautiful, man. It's, like I said, you're so tired when you get there. It's a 17-hour ride to get to Australia. Yeah. And, but the work of the people was awesome. They had this, big dome that we worked there. It was like an air dome that you have to watch. They have to let a beeper go before you go in and out the back door because the air suction in the roof it's such a, you know, keep that door shut. You have to push a button and they have to let you in the door. But man, it was cool. And it was like, had a big nice casino next to it. And not really any wild stories from there, you know, just, it was always, we were always working and performing and, the crowds were always awesome. And, you know, I enjoyed going there because my dad had gone there several times. I always kind of like going to places that my dad went to, so I could say that I've been there. And Australia was one of them. I went to Japan. My first time I went to Japan, it's just a really cool experience. There was an old-time Japanese guy there named Joe the Pearl Man. They used to always hook the guys up with jewelry, you know, all the wrestlers, you know, for their wives, you know. And so we all went out, and there was four or five of us, and they said, this Japanese guy wants to take us out, you know. And we went to the Playboy Club, and we went to some restaurant. So the guy, he didn't know me from Adam. And we were talking, and during the course of the conversation, he found out that my dad was Jody Hamilton, the assassin. My uncle was the Missouri Mauler. And he went, oh. And he made me come with him. We left the freaking bar and we went and opened up his business where he was at. And he went in and he pulled out an old bloody mask of one of my dad's. And that was like from about 20 years before. Wow. And he also had a picture of my uncle that my uncle had signed. And so I ended up getting some jewelry from my wife while I was there, you know, because it was after hours. Now I can say that I got to buy something from Joe the Pearl Man, but it was really cool to see that, you know, that he saved that type of memorabilia from my family.
Yeah.
And when he found out that, who I was, then he popped real big. I didn't know what the pop was about. I didn't speak Japanese. But the translator told me, says, hey, yeah. Then when I saw the stuff and I knew what the pop was about,
he
spoke enough English where, you know, he could communicate with us after
working
with knowing the American boys for so many years, selling them jewelry and talking to them. So, but I guess he didn't follow our wrestling, the new as much as he did the old back in the day.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool experience.
Did you ever go to Ribera Steakhouse?
I know I went by it twice, but I heard a couple of people tell me that quality wise, it wasn't that great. That it's just more of a thing to do.
The thing to say you did. Yeah.
Yeah. To get the jacket.
Get a jacket and say you're there.
Yeah. To get your picture. But I did go by it and see it a couple of times. It was packed and I wasn't going to wait in line to it. We went to a couple other places that were really good. I mean, that's That's another thing about traveling international, trying some different foods and different stuff. I love Japanese food. I love the American version of Japanese food. Now, when you get over there and see some of the local things, you know, the stuff that you don't, stuff that you're not going to see at Ribera or any of those other places.
They got any interesting foods in Australia?
It was pretty standard. Okay. It was different. I know the meat tastes different. It's got more of that gamey taste, you know, like venison does. Yeah. I don't think they aged their stuff like we do. And I remember the first time we were there, we had catering, and I walked down, man, they had this big tray of these giant fillets. And I was like, holy crap, that looks awesome. This big filet mignon, man. And I took a big bite of it. And I hate to sound like a wuss, but I never was a hunter, you know, and I'm not a big game. I don't like that gamey taste. Yeah. You know, if I have deer, it has to be cooked a certain way. If it's cooked right, I'm cool with it, you know. But if it's got any of that gamey taste to it at all, I'm not down with that a bit, man.
And
not
these are gamey? Bit.
Yeah. And I took a big bite of that steak, and I was like, I went and had a big ass salad. So I hope they don't screw their chicken up.
You're Australian vegetarian for a week.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I had a big ass salad.
Hector Mason wants to know, Nick, have you ever received instructions for a match that you disagreed with? Maybe you didn't think it made sense creatively or believed it would kill the crowd. Or do you you just go with whatever's going down?
Well, yeah, it wasn't my job to. You know, it was my job to do what they wanted me to do. You know, yeah. If you sit there, especially as a referee, think, you know, this isn't really working for me. You're not going to have a job for very long. Yeah, right. You know what I mean? I can see me walking in and saying that to Vince. You know, Vince, this whole production meeting I listened to, and there's several things that I think that you need to clean up around here, pal. You see that happen, man. Hell, it might get me hired.
Yeah, you might appreciate the
hustle. I'm not looking for it.
Our last one for this evening, Jack Spade, who always likes to chime in. Jack said, Nick, thanks for always getting to our questions. We appreciate your time. He said, always love giving out the birthdays because it kind of jogs people's memories. So, Nick, what's your thoughts on this day, January 15th? It is Bull Buchanan's birthday. Did you ever have any interaction with Bull Buchanan?
Oh, yeah. I like Bull, man. Pop and I one time, I've known Bull for a while, you know, knew him when he was up in WWE. I was there standing in the real position when he blew his knee out, doing it, running up the top, trying to do something. And, oh, man, I felt so bad for him because he was about to get a really good push there, man. And I saw Vince's reaction. He was like, oh, because Vince wanted to do something with him. I could tell.
Yeah.
Super nice guy. There was a guy that was running down in Warner Robins, Georgia, had a little TV, had a make a TV, and had a little building down there. And he wanted me and Pop to organize it and get it to where it was drawing more than 20 people. So we started writing little shows and doing stuff for him. First thing we did was get Bull to come in and be our big badass heel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And had him just come in and we had him, we did a couple of vignettes where he we had access to some different businesses around the Warner Robins. So we had him go down to a junkyard and just demolish a car, you know. Say, I don't need a damn compactor here at my junkyard. I just smash the crap out of some stuff, man. We had to do some, you know. But and sure enough, it turned around. We started filling that little place up. Bull, super, super nice guy. Good hand in the ring, and somebody these young kids can really learn from. And then as you can tell, his kids are learning. He's got one in WWE, and
yeah, Brooks
and another, and another young one here that's coming up that's going to be just as good. You know, so yeah, they're a whole family of athletes and nice people, good people.
And last but not least, the other birthday is Mr. Shane McMahon. What was your interactions with Shane when you were with the company?
I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with Shane. He came and he would show up and do stuff and then would be gone for a while, you know? And I got along fine with him. I didn't have ever have a problem with him. I remember one time we was in Japan, and Shane was in charge of the tour. And he had a friend that he worked with in the office that I don't know what the guy did, but he was one of Shane's friends. And they went out and drank and got in a barroom brawl and stuff. And
he's in charge of the tour?
Yeah. So he gets back to the hotel. Now Vince has already heard about it. You know, because no, you can't fart anywhere in the world. And somebody had to go run stooge to Vince. Oh, he's farting. You know, right. I mean, it's just that way. He's got a stooge network. You know, he knew before Shane got back to the freaking hotel, right? So Michael Hayes calls me because, you know, Michael is, you know, Vince gets mad. He calls Michael. Yeah. Michael's butt puckers and he tries to solve problems, right? Michael comes to me and wants me to help get Shane back to his room. I'm thinking, you want me to help get Shane McMahon back to his room? Are you? Are you kidding? How far is this supposed to go here? You know, and why does Shane need help? What the hell? You know, can they know what room number he's in or what? You know,
yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, but you know, we never found him. I guess he was in his room.
Showed up, was good to go.
You know, actually, we did find him, and we and Michael talked to him, and I just kind of walked and stood back and let him talk. You know, like. I ain't here to grab you. He asked me to come by that shit. Yeah. I'm just glad I wasn't in the bar fighting because I'd probably been the one that went to jail.
There seems to be a trend of everybody calling you to save the day or to be the I don't know, the guy, the counselor.
The voice of reason.
Isn't yeah. That's the voice of reason, Nick Patrick.
That's insane. That's what's wrong with the world
you
today.
You had them all funneled, didn't you?
I ran a great bluff on the whole world. my Dr. Evil laugh.
That was a good stuff. Well, thanks, man. Appreciate you answering the questions. Appreciate everybody for asking the questions. Whenever you listen to this or watch it on ad-free shows, make sure you drop a question below. We would love to get to your questions every single time. So make sure you get us a question. We'd love to answer it. I mean, that makes the show is we never know what y'all are going to ask. So go check that out and drop a message to us in the comment section, wherever you are consuming this over at ad-free shows. And Nick, one more time, Deep South Wrestling, January 20th, Das Barbecue, correct?
Yeah, 5 o'clock bell time. Come on down, get there early, man. Get you a good seat, get some food, and get you something to drink. Doesn't have to be alcoholic beverage, but they've got it if you want it. And some of those beers are our sponsors. So yeah, come down and have a great time. We've got a great lineup of matches. You can wish Jim and Jewel a happy birthday. We're all going to wish her a happy birthday. Great tag team match. The Deep South title on the line. Skrilla the Great puts his title on the line against Chad Skywalker. Like I said, we had a great tag team match at Bad and the Beautiful, taking on Tyson Maddox and Jacob Johnson. And that is what I really want to see. Because I'm, like I said earlier, I love tag team action, and we're trying to build it. And the Bad and Beautiful has shown me that they've got what it takes, but they're really going to have to step up because Tyson Maddox and Jacob Johnson are two bad dudes, man. And if they can just gel it all as a team, somebody's going to have a hard time.
And then I think coming up as well, you got another one in Franklin coming up, right?
Yeah, pretty soon. I don't have any information on cards yet. We're still putting things together and signing people, but that's going to be a big one.
January 28th.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one for us. So you be watching out because information soon will be coming out.
If you want to check it out, like we said, go everywhere, Deep South Wrestling. Go to the website. That'll take you to everything. WeAreDeepSouth.com. That's got their link, how you can sponsor them, how all the links to their YouTube, their Instagram, and their Facebook. And it's got, of course, a list of all their live events coming up. So stay tuned there. Go check them out at DeepSouthWrestling.com. Nick, appreciate you, brother, hanging out with me again tonight.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man.
To sit down and laugh with you.
Oh, man, I love talking about wrestling. It's been my whole life, you know, ever since I was a little baby. I learned Carney at the same time I learned English. Yeah, this is fun for me too, man. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody. For Nick Patrick, I'm Cassio, and thanks for listening to another edition of Monday Mailbag with Nick Patrick.